Hello, everyone. This is Cassie Burns, co-founder of All Your Data. I'm an attorney who's been using AI and machine learning for 10 years. I love data and love talking to people about data, and that's what this podcast is about. Each episode of Cassie and will feature a new guest. Each guest comes from a different background with a different approach and attitude towards technology. We'll talk about their experiences and hopefully we'll learn a thing or two. Thanks for joining. Let's get started with Cassie and Cassie. It is just me today. You just have Cassie in today's Cassie and episode. Now, this is a tradition I started with my very first season. I'm on season 3 now, and I ended my first season, episode 20, with me as the only guest, and I talked about what it was like being an e-discovery attorney. And then I closed out my second season talking about AI governance. And now here at the end of the third, we're going to talk about a related topic that's near and dear to my heart, data curation. Now, as you all know, this podcast is all about exploring how data, technology, and AI intersect with our lives. And really, you know, looking ahead in 2025 as to how we're going to start tackling this AI nut in a little bit more of a nuanced way. Now, I want to shine a light today on something we often overlook in the conversation about AI, and that's the data layer. We often talk about data in the context of AI. We all know it's important. We all know AI is the new gold. We don't really always talk about data quality. We don't really talk about data curation or knowledge management. And that's a really important element of AI systems that are effective and AI workflows that are effective. And I think will continue to be a very important point of focus and discussion. In other words, beyond the flashy algorithms and models that we spend a lot of talking about, how does the quality and curation of data make or break our use of AI? And one thing I really want to talk about in this episode is we're not always that great at prioritizing thoughtful, intentional data curation. We're really great at grabbing lots of data. We often talk about data in volume, how many terabytes, how many petabytes, how much. But we don't really talk about, you know, maybe not all data is created equal. It may not be as valuable for the purpose by which it's been collected. I'll argue even, or I'll say, get on my soapbox and say that refining AI means being a lot more discerning about that data that we use with our AI systems. I know that doesn't sound as fun, cataloging, ranking, deciding what's the best data to use. That is not necessarily the funnest job in the world. We like creating things. We like looking ahead. We like looking forward. We don't always like looking back and getting things organized. That's not always as fun. I think we can all look at our photo gallery on our phones and think of all the photos we've taken. Some are pretty worthless, but we never get around to deleting them. And some are really valuable to us. Think of data in terms of that photo gallery that you have on your phone. I mean, my goodness, I probably have over 10,000 photos on my phone. That's insane. There's probably a lot there I need to go through and delete. But you know what? That takes time to do. I'm sure there's an AI tool to help manage that. But it's not something, it's always on the bottom of our to-do list, getting our data, our files organized. Never at the top, always at the bottom. I'm going to say a phrase and you can say it with me. I'm sure you can maybe guess what I'm about to say because it's very important in the context of AI. Garbage in, garbage out. Data quality 101. It's something I learned in my days as an e-discovery attorney. The quality, diversity of the data will have an impact on the quality of your results, you know, in addition to other elements at play. If you think about it, AI models are maybe only as good as the data they're trained on. That's maybe a simplified way to think of it. More broadly, if we feed or leverage flawed or junk or heavily biased data, we can expect that to have some impact to the results that we're getting from those tools. Imagine training a language model on text that's just full of errors and bias. That is going to be reflected again in the outputs that you have. We already are hearing about how there is prompt injection where there's regression training and people are in essence feeding junky data to have an impact and create flaws and do damage to an AI system. So there are threat actors that realize the importance of, in essence, data curation. It's something that is talked a lot in AI ethics is bias. You know, you could even say bias in, bias out. If there is bias in the data set, if there's bias in how we've trained that data, how we've categorized it to inform the AI model, there is probably going to be bias in that output. So if that data is skewed in some way, or it's not fully representative, it's not fully diverse of the broader use of how that AI system is meant to be used, those outputs are going to have some problems because of it. It's going to reflect what it was trained on. It is that mirror looking back at us. There are some great examples of that. Facial recognition systems that have maybe only predominantly been trained on white males, the ramifications potentially to that are fairly significant to human rights. Let's talk about data curation and take it one step further. Let's talk about data provenance. Now, I'm going to show my uncoolness by saying I first heard of the term provenance because I was a kid growing up in the late 90s watching episodes of Antiques Roadshow on PBS on Monday nights. And a really important aspect of something that's being reviewed and assessed is the provenance of that object that's being looked at by an expert. And that provenance is the proof showing the history, how that individual got that object that's being looked at, and the value, the extra value that provenance brings. And sometimes it shows the authenticity of that item. Now, in the context of data provenance is a fancy way of saying you're tracking the source of the data that you have used either as the training for that model or maybe in a library, an extra data layer for RAG-like workflows. And so what that might be is you're tracking information, metadata related to a data set that identifies where that data is coming from. So it might list the source. It might list, does this information have protected information? Is there PII in here? Is there PHI? Are there any limitations to the use of this data? Whether that's, you know, time limitations, I have a license to use this data in this way in a limited amount of time, or I can only use it in certain geographic areas. And we're starting to see groups come together and talk about protocols that are standardized around, in essence, data set metadata, provenance metadata. The Data and Trust Alliance is one group. We'll really start to see the importance of that, not only maybe in foundational models, but also, again, that reference data, the library that you build when you set up a RAG system, an AI workflow that leverages RAG or reference data in a retrieval augmented generation system. So I like to describe RAG systems kind of like an expansion pack to a card game. Like you go and you get your core set of Pokemon cards, and that's your core set of skills. It's well defined, but there may be extra things you want in your toolkit, extra skills that you want for a specific purpose. And so that expansion pack in this context would be a well-curated library of data, an extra data layer that's focused maybe on a specific area of study. So it could be a specific area of the law or a specific area of medicine or maybe a certain area of history that's very narrow and deep and detailed. And that is used to supplement, it's an additional reference point to those AI systems to help mitigate, you know, the potential for hallucinations and at the very least provide citations. So it can make you, as you validate the results of those AI systems, a little bit easier. Having the rigor, building in that rigor of data provenance to, I'm going to be very intentional about the data I'm pulling together to create this more robust, more refined, more efficient AI system. I want to make sure it's the best of the best. It's the best examples. It's the best data. It's the most current and up to date. It's the most robust. And so being able to track that and maybe the timing of the source, these data sets are not always evergreen. Sometimes there's an element of needing to update these data layers, the data libraries. So as you move forward beyond 2025, you know that there is going to be a constant cycle of needing to update that data. And so another benefit of having that provenance is being able to know when that data layer was created and may create a mechanism for you to know when, how often you need to potentially update that data layer. As I hinted at before, we're not great at tracking data sets. And I know a little bit about that from the experience I have in the context of information governance, again, in the context of e-discovery and working with client data. We're really great at creating data, and then it kind of gets filed away, maybe not well organized in any way. And then we move on. And then we end up having this trail of data behind us that's not well organized. It's not identified in a way for the best exemplars to be used. And so we really need to start rethinking and revisiting the importance of identifying that pristine, perfect, you know, or near perfect data set for maybe specific use cases. Of course, you also want to make sure you're thinking of things of license, whether or not you can use that data for the purpose, and that will all come into play of what sort of AI systems are being used and how that data flow with those AI systems. So that's also something to be considered, not something of the focus of this podcast episode. And as we start to get focused on better provenance, better curation, better tracking, it'll just make our AI trustworthiness and performance a little bit easier to identify, manage, validate. So these are all things to be thinking of. Innovation isn't just going to be in a new model, a new tool. It's how do we refine it and make it like the most powerful workflow. It should be workflow innovation. And part of that is in, if you're thinking of it as a sports person, and I'm not a sports ball person at all, but if you're thinking of someone who's supposed to be a top athlete, these are the things that athlete needs to do to be the best performing athlete. And so that's really nearly how we need to start thinking about these AI tools. We have our core AI tools out there. They will probably be refined. There may be other layers of innovation that happen as far as some major shift in the underlying architecture. But I really think in the immediate future, it is going to be in how we're really building narrow, deep, very bespoke systems that are heavily leveraging highly customized, well-curated data sets for those data layers, that library, managed and put together by a subject matter expert. Now, let's pause and step back and think more broadly. Talking about data curation, talking about data provenance, we are starting to see some laws out there get passed that talk about in essence, data curation and data transparency. California passed a series of AI-related laws at the end of 2024, I believe 8 or 9. There were a lot to keep track of. And I believe one was specific about data transparency, where there needs to be some level of tracking data sets used to train these AI systems and disclosing whether or not they had personal information or copyright information, describing data sources and collection periods and processing methods, and even talking about all of the data points. So again, that's where like the concepts of metadata specific to data sets, it's an, a bit of an inception. We're like metadata, John Malkovich moment nearly. And then the EU AI Act also has some language, some regulations out there about high-risk AI systems may have an obligation to produce detailed technical information and instructions. General purpose AI models may also have that obligation to maintain and create technical documentation about specific elements. So there's still some element of process and operations around the EU AI Act that are still getting worked out and refined, but there still is likely going to be an element of AI deployers, AI providers having to track some level of that data. As I said in my season closer of season 2, I talked a lot about AI mapping, and we nearly need to come full circle and talk about data mapping again. Now, data mapping was talked about when GDPR was passed in the rise of information governance, and now we need to revisit it in the context of AI systems. So it's nearly like a mapping sandwich. You have data mapping, AI mapping, and then data mapping again is going to be part of these compliance professionals out there, InfoGov professionals out there. Something else to think about is the diversity of data, and volume may not be the best thing. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. Maybe being thoughtful about the diversity in data, diversity and balance. And I remember reading an article once talking about how AI systems are largely trained on English content written in English. And so it has that bias of an English language, you know, Western social mores and things like that. Thinking of the lack of diversity, what that could mean, but also acknowledging that maybe underrepresented data is also hard to get. And again, this is where I say data isn't always easy. There is the easy to scoop up data, maybe, but to get to very diverse, well-represented, rich data, that takes some effort. And there's also a level of potential consent that comes in. I've had a guest on my show talking about rights of Native people and their data sovereignty. So those kinds of questions and conversations should be had in this entire context. We're also seeing data is no longer just static. You think of data and you kind of think of data being a static thing. It exists, a snapshot in time. But we're seeing data moving from a static state to a dynamic state. Some great examples of this are collaboration tools. If you use in your work Microsoft Word and you use Teams, you can be working in a Word document with multiple other people, and that document might have hundreds of versions. Or even if we think of other data points that are maybe not authored data points, but maybe Internet of Things data points, that's something that data is constantly being tracked and potentially updated, and what that potentially means for AI. And then, you know, something else we have to be aware of increasingly is the coming transition from data sources that are largely human created content to increasingly generative AI created content. We're already seeing, hearing people talking about AI slop. AI is getting flooded with synthetic content of varying degrees of quality, and it's not all good. And the downside to generative AI is its sheer ability to scale up quickly. And so having all of this data that's out there, yes, our data volumes will continue to be produced at higher, increasing levels. But how? What's the quality there? What do we want to be more discerning in our future efforts to train foundational models? That's another element to this whole data curation conversation. If you think about noise, if you think about the amount of noise out there in your data sets, again, let's go back to our photo gallery on our phones. It's like I'm increasingly getting random shots of things I accidentally take photos of, as opposed to good photos of my dog, you know, or good photos of flowers in my backyard. So I have to flip through more of them to get to the photo that I really want, because I'm not taking the time to actually weed out the junky ones I accidentally create. Thinking about if we are pulling in too much synthetic data as we move forward, what does that do to these foundation models? Will there be model collapse? There's some people saying that. It's like if you compress and you compress and you compress and you compress a file, the quality, there's degradation in quality when that happens. And so there's some people who've done research around this and find that there is a true risk for that out there. So what do we do to minimize that in the context of foundation models or general purpose AI systems? The last thing I want to talk about is, again, we talk about data ain't easy. Data's not easy. There's also this idea that something on the internet is out there forever. And there is a lot of truth to that. But it really isn't. It isn't. There is the potential for a website to maybe delete some content for whatever reason, or maybe a blogger website gets shut down and it's no longer up, or there are other reasons why maybe someone managing a website just decides, I don't want that content on this website anymore, and it goes away. And unless it's been preserved some way, like a Wayback Machine or some other mechanism, that information's gone. There's concepts of like what you call link rot, where you have a link and it was a valid link at one time, but then you go there and that website is no longer active. And so then if you think about maybe leveraging data from the internet for data curation or for training or anything like that, it may be for validation of other parties, being able to do that may not be possible if that content goes away. The internet in some ways is a bit like a slow burning of the Library of Alexandria, where you think all this information is there and it could still go away. Unless it's on like blockchain, you know, an ordinal, something else to consider. First of all, there's a lot of AI content out there. So kudos to anyone trying to stay on top of it. You can't really stay on top of it. You can just do your best to be aware of what's most important to you. But I think an important thing we should all be considering going into the rest of the year is, how can we drive innovation in the use of these tools beyond just out of the box plug and play? What can we do to curate our own libraries of knowledge, of data, that will let me be that human in the loop, not even that human in the loop, that conductor, that one navigating and planning out how I want that AI tool to make my life easier. And curating that data and tracking the provenance of that data is part of that. And I'm sure anyone in knowledge management out there already knows what I'm saying. It's very hard in your day-to-day to be thinking about keeping things well organized and tracking maybe the best examples of something for this other purpose I have. That time put up front of building that well-curated data set will only make the build of that AI system, that tool, more effective and really get you to the results you want faster. You're the engineer. You are the Leonardo da Vinci. You're the Michelangelo chipping away to get to that sculpture, that tool that you want. And you really just want to focus on the marble that's most important. And that's your well-curated data. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation. You know me, I love talking about data, and I've really appreciated everyone who's dialed in and listened to my episodes through now my third season. So I hope you've learned something. And for everyone joining, I want to thank you and look forward to having you join the next episode of Cassie and